All right, well, this is class one in our course, Analysis of Literature 2. And hopefully for this first class, everyone has had opportunity to read chapter 6 in the student textbook. Also, I'd just like to briefly at the beginning here review some of the things that we covered in the introduction to the textbook just before we, as a beginning to the semester. Keep in mind that we are examining in this course and in the course Analysis of Literature 1 a range of the literature from a range of eras and encompassing a range of literary genre. The objective is to equip students in the skill of reading literature in an analytical way and of communicating their analysis both writing and verbally. The course grade will be based on performance in the written assignments as well as in the quality of class participation. Students will need two books for the course, the student textbook Analysis of Literature and the student workbook. Some of the questions in the student workbook will be gone over verbally in class, and some will be answered by students in writing. Again, I'd like to begin, though, by just quickly reviewing the introduction, since this is the beginning of this semester's course. Okay, now in the introduction, as you will recall, we had read how even in terms of our reading of literature, like all other aspects of life, that the chief aim and objective is to glorify God. As it says in 1 Corinthians 10:31, whether therefore ye eat or drink or whatsoever ye do, do all to the glory of God. And then in the introductory chapter, it had listed a certain of the ways that we can glorify God in our reading, in terms of what we read, in terms of priority of reading, in terms of how we read, in terms, for instance, that that when there is evil, that we discern it, and that we not be entertained by it or enjoy it, but on the other hand, that which is good, that we appreciate and enjoy. So there is this duty as far as rightly responding to what we read, and there is also the duty to be being careful in what we read. Again, what we read and how we respond to what we read will inevitably determine how we think. And how we think will obviously have an effect upon the way we behave. As it says in Proverbs 4:23, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. And now, in the course Analysis of Literature 1, we had covered various eras. We had actually covered like what is called the classical and pre-Renaissance era, also during a lot of the literature from the Reformation era. We got up to like the 18th century literature and on into the early 19th century in terms of what's called Romantic era literature. And we then got into later on into 19th century literature in terms of literature that tended to be more of the what might be called the British Victorian era, where there was a lot of the literature was characterized by a high sense of nationalism and so forth. We are still in right now in terms of what we are reading then in this Analysis of Literature course 2. We're going to primarily be reading literature from the 19th and 20th centuries. And what we find here in the literature of chapter 6, for instance, is coming from the latter half of the 19th century, and the other literature we'll be reading is primarily from it. The one exception being in chapter 12, we're going to be going back in time, as it were, to more of the Reformation, Renaissance era, and looking at a drama by Shakespeare. But for the most part, in this course, we're in this particular semester's course, we're going to be focusing upon literature from the 19th and 20th centuries, and hopefully you will see in that a certain the way that literature has progressed over time. That, and I don't mean progress morally speaking, because in many ways, morally speaking, it has gone down. But I just mean how it's changed. It has changed over time, and the literature that has characterized an era tells much about that era. There's much to learn about how people were in a particular era by the literature that was written. So we see that, and that's sort of the historical standpoint where we stand. In terms of the genre, in the Analysis of Literature 1 course, we looked at a variety of literary genre. We looked at the short story, for instance, as a genre. We looked at poetry. And what we come to here in Chapter 6, of course, is the novel. Now, does anyone remember the definition of novel? You can just put it in your own words.
A long fictional work.
Yes. It's a fictional, a more dictionary definition is a fictional prose narrative of considerable length, typically having a plot that is unfolded by the action, speech, and thoughts of the characters. A work that is similar in nature, in terms of being a fictional prose narrative, but shorter in length, is sometimes called a novelette. But one that's more lengthy, such as Huckleberry Finn, which we see in chapter 6, is considered a novel. Now, I'd like to also preface going into some of the questions for chapter 6. Just a brief discussion with respect to the whole issue of our reading of novels. It is important that we are aware of the world around us. And it is important that we learn how to discern what is wicked. This is why I think it is appropriate that we spend some educational time in analyzing some novels like Huckleberry Finn. On the other hand, it is not right to be entertained by, feed upon, or recreate in wickedness, such as sadly... And I will be wanting to get your opinions on this, but sadly, as from everything I can tell, is what we find in novels like Huckleberry Finn, and in the novel Huckleberry Finn. We should rather be grieved by them. We should not recreate in things that make light of or promote sin. One purpose of this course is to show why we should not recreate in novels like this. I think we underestimate the extent to which we as humans are affected when we read a novel or watch a movie that portrays someone as a hero who is really wicked. And especially if we come to enjoy that. The way the world works is it tries to portray that which is really wicked as if it were good. And as we are discussing Huckleberry Finn, and as you're analyzing Huckleberry Finn. The thing that we have to ask is this really, you know, in some sense, obviously, Huckleberry Finn is portrayed as the hero here. And undoubtedly is, obviously, in terms of portraying him as the hero, it shows his good sides. And of course, it's not like anyone is all wicked anyway. I mean, there are, but the question we have to ask is, biblically speaking, is Huckleberry Finn someone, as he is portrayed, who is a real hero? And therefore, is this really appropriate for us to feed upon and recreate in on a normal basis? Or is it going to, even though subtly, be affecting the way we think? But keeping in mind that all of us have a sinful nature. Even those who are converted have a sinful nature and tend to gravitate back to sin. So the question is this something that is going to build us up spiritually, or is this something that is going to have the subtle effect of actually tearing us down spiritually? And so, again, I just want to say this because I don't want to give the impression that by our reading this here that I am encouraging us to spend recreational time in reading novels like Huckleberry Finn. That is not my objective. I think that it is important that we be aware of the world in which we live, and so that we can relate to the world and communicate with the world, and even so that we can explain to the world why we think that this or that is wrong when we have to say that. But on the other hand, that's quite different from recreating in something. Are there any thoughts before we begin then on some of the thoughts I've shared with you with regard to the novel Huckleberry Finn, just as a general matter? Any thoughts before we begin?
Well, I think that also extends even to like poetry, because like some of the poems you read.
Yes, it does. Actually, you're absolutely right.
And even stuff like news or.
Well, again, as far as being entertained by or recreate in, but the question is, what is the purpose? We have to look, what is the purpose of reading a novel?
Well, obviously we're reading it because...
Louder.
We're obviously reading it for a reason right now, right?
Right. We are reading it... Actually, we are reading it for several purposes. Number one, because we need to be aware of the world, and we need to be able to explain to people why novels like this are wrong. And without some familiarity with them, it's not like pornography. We don't need to be viewing pornography in order to be able to explain what is wrong with this sort of thing. We can tell people. But on the other hand, how can we, if we don't have any familiarity at all with novels like Huckleberry Finn, how can we even begin to explain why they are wrong? But on the other hand, as comparing it with, remember, a novel is a fictional work. And you're right, poetry can be fictional. Poetry actually can be, the Book of Psalms is poetry, but it's not, I wouldn't call it fictional.
But even non-fictional poetry can still be wicked.
Yes, it can be.
And still be meant for recreation.
Right, and then it would be wrong to recreate in it. But again, fiction, unlike, let's say, watching the news, when we watch the news, let's say, or read a newspaper, what we are doing is we are obtaining actual information, or at least attempts at actual information, so as to become aware of what's happening in the world around us.
But even novels are written with a purpose. Like, Mark Twain was trying to provide sort of in his view of things. Of course, his view of things was wrong, but he's still trying to influence people.
Yes, but he was influencing people by works that he himself admit this is not actually the case. Whereas in the case of a news presentation, it is actually trying to say these are the facts of what are happening. We're not, in other words, I don't...
He was trying to say that in a way reflects reality. He wasn't saying that's total fantasy. He was saying it is
fantasy. That's the problem. I realize what he is saying.
I think what Calvin means is it's historical fiction.
Well, he wrote a story. He just started writing words. He was trying to do something that would reflect on society and that would influence people. It was not just...
His primary purpose was not actually necessarily to entertain, but actually to promote his agenda.
Yeah.
Okay, so the question I have here is...
Well, partly I think it was to entertain, because it was kind of a bit comical and humorous.
It was a combination.
It was a combination.
He was just using that as a way to pull people into the story and to get across his viewpoint.
Okay, but the question that I have here is it because it is not... a presentation of facts. It is not a presentation. A fiction, it is a fictional work.
But he was.
Do we need to, how much time do we need to spend in, because it's not like we're getting facts from this, how much time do we need to spend in reading novels? That's my question. How much time? Because it's not presenting, it is presenting the agenda of someone. It is presenting the agenda of someone from their perspective.
So does news.
Not presenting fact. It's not fact, it's fiction.
But both.
We got a definition.
Not, it's news is not necessarily all fact.
It's trying to be factual. It is actually, it is the objective of when we watch, let's say you watch the NewsHour or Layer, let's say you read a news, it is attempting to be as factual as it can. And however much we may be concerned about journalism, you know, in terms of the world around us, the reality is it does try, there is the effort, even on the part of secularists, to present that which is true in the news. Now, granted, I have no doubt, is that objective always met? No, absolutely not. But even with a secularist, they are trying to, that is the objective. Whereas in a novel, you can portray a world, you're not even saying that this is all true. In fact, by the very nature of it, it is fiction. So, but you're portraying a world, it's really a world of fantasy, but to try to get across your agenda and subtly affect people by a world of fantasy. Now, again, I'm not saying that we shouldn't be aware of this, but the question is this something that is going to spiritually build us up and something that we need to do much at all, other than being aware of it? That is my question. That is the question I would raise. As you know, my own answer is that no, we don't.
Well, it's not entirely a matter of time, because it's a matter of just right and wrong. It's not like how much time should you spend, so that you should do it at all. So, I mean, right?
It is. It's a matter of both. It's a matter of both, because you don't need to the extent that one needs to be aware of the world around us, and to the extent that we need to be able to communicate to others about the world around us. We need perhaps some familiarity with things. However, to the extent that we need to at all be recreated by it, that's quite a different matter. And to the extent that since its basic genre is fictional, it's not attempting to present truth.
Well, he was trying to prevent his truth in a way. It was a false, but he was still trying.
But it's fiction.
The point is that it's
it's not like this was just something that's totally unrelated to reality. He was trying to portray reality.
But using a fictional method, using a fantasy. And so the question I still come back to is this...
Is it right to use the term fantasy for this?
Well, it's fictional.
It's not fantasy because it's still real.
It's a world that is separated in many that is separated to the extent that he wants it to be from reality. He can present he can try to present reality, but he is not compelled to do it, forced to show by facts. Because he can always turn back and say, ah, but this, my genre is a novel. He's not forced to say, I am presenting a fact. These are actual people.
The reason he was actually able to do what he did, though, was because he was claiming that that was sort of reflecting what America was back then. He was saying that that was America in a way.
I would not, let me just say this, and I'm going to close this part of our discussion with this statement. Yes, I grant you, but the question is, should we allow the wicked to get away with their purpose of presenting America, as he says, without presenting facts? I think that as Christians, we shouldn't let him get away with that agenda on ourselves and on others. If he wants to present facts to me and present his arguments based on facts, I will hear those facts, because those facts might even change my thinking, because the seculars can be right in certain ways. But I'm not going to let him get away with presenting what is definitely fiction, and he admits is fiction, and in any way try to persuade me based on fiction. I'm not going to let the wicked get away with that. And I don't think I should let the wicked.
Well, I'm not saying we should let him get away with trying to convince me. That's not my point.
Okay, what I'm saying is we need to very much limit our time with this genre. The purpose of this course, and I'm going to now move on. The purpose of this course is not to say go out and read novels in your spare time. That's not the purpose. The purpose is. This is a sad case of the reality of what novels are like. We have to be aware of it. But we should not be recreate in it or allow ourselves to be taken in by it. Okay, so I'd like to now move on. What I'd like to do is. Students should have, of course, read Chapter 6, and during this class we shall go over all questions in the student workbook, except those to be done by students in the written assignment for Chapter 6. Your written assignment due in 2 weeks is as follows. Do question 2, write a 1 to 2 page paper answering this question. Question 13, write a 1-page paper answering this question. And question 24, write a list answering this question. Now, we are going to be going over the questions of assignment for Chapter 6 in this class and the remainder of this class and in next class. So we're not just going to be spending this class on these questions other than on questions 2, 13, and 24. Okay, question number 1. Some have called The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn the great American epic. Do you agree, why or why not? Is this the great American epic, as some have asserted, and do you agree, why or why not?
The people who said it was the great American epic, this critics, from in what century did these critics live?
Well,
would a modern day critic still say the same thing?
Oh yes, absolutely.
They would still say the same thing.
Oh yes, in fact, my English teacher, I'm just giving one little example, but I also, in terms of, because I read this when I attended public school, my English teacher said this, but also I read it in various reviews and critiques of this. First of all, I'd like just to go, what does the word epic mean? Because obviously if it says the great American epic, or a great American epic. What is epic mean? Do you remember what epic means?
A story about a great person.
Okay, narrowly defined, an epic is a long narrative poem in elevated style recounting the deeds of a legendary or historical hero. And it gives the example of the Iliad and the Odyssey. Of course, we looked at those in previous courses. But strictly speaking, according to this first narrow definition of epic, is Huckleberry Finn an epic?
No.
Why not?
Well, because he isn't a historical figure.
Okay, all right. He's not an historical figure. What's the second reason it's not an epic, according to this more narrow definition?
He isn't to be admired.
Actually, Mark Twain didn't consider him to be admired. And we have to put it from the perspective of the author. But what
it's
is
not
it?
A poem.
There you go. That was the second I was looking for. It's not a poem, right? I mean, this is written in narrative format. It's why it's called a novel. So by this narrow definition, it's not an epic. But now the second definition in Webster's reads like this. A work of art as a novel or drama that resembles or suggests an epic. Now, according to this definition, can you see why this could be called an epic or not? Why can it be called an epic according to this more broad definition of the word epic?
Because it is the story of a person, and it's talking about his adventures and recounting them.
Right. And even though it's not strictly speaking a poem, it is trying to, in some sense, do what a classic epic poem would do, in the sense that who, in some sense, is this Huck Finn representing? Who do you think Mark Twain is saying this Huck Finn somewhat represents? Like, when we have looked at, let me go back to Homer's Odysseus, okay? Who in some sense did Odysseus represent?
Greek society.
Yeah, it sort of was like the Greek ideal, right? I mean, and his various characteristics, in some sense, was what the Greeks admired. In some sense, was the representative or ideal Greek, in many ways, to the ancient Greeks. Okay, and so, in what sense is Huck Finn a sort of a representative ideal of America? Again, I'm not saying in truth, all right? I'm saying from the standpoint of Mark Twain and those who would agree with Mark Twain.
Well, for Mark Twain, it represented the people who, the Americans who sort of would have rejected the religion that they've been taught and sort of went off on their own, basically.
Right. In other words, it represented, I mean, in many senses, right? I mean, America.
Well, that's the problem with it. It doesn't really represent truly.
Right. But let me, from the standpoint of many Americans, and in some sense, it's true. America has been characterized by independence, right? I mean, casting aside tradition, as it were, all right, quote unquote tradition, being boldly going out into the frontier. And I'm not saying all this in a negative way, by the way. It's wrong to go out in the frontier. I'm simply saying, to the extent that Huck Finn, you know, he cast aside tradition, and he boldly, he's independent. He seeks to be independent-minded. it even ends in terms of his going out into the frontier. So there are at least certain senses, right, until in which he is a what many in America, okay, including Mark Twain, would aspire to. Again, I'm not saying whether this is right or wrong. I'm simply saying that this is what we find here. So in terms of then it's being a great American epic, do you see why some people can say, hopefully, you know, why they believe it is a great American epic, at least in its attempt? Okay, now, question number three. How is Huck Finn represented? Well, we covered that in terms of how it's representative of America, but evaluated biblically, should we consider Huck Finn a hero? Now that you've read chapter 6, how should we evaluate Huck Finn?
No, he wasn't a hero because...
Louder.
He wasn't a hero.
Okay, and why should we not consider him a hero?
Well, he rejected Christianity and lived in contradiction to it, obviously.
Right, okay. So he very obviously lived in contradiction to Christianity. Question number four. What was Huck Finn's view of history, and how did this influence his religious philosophy? Do you remember, in terms of your reading of this, what were his thoughts about history?
It doesn't really do much good to do what's right.
Okay. And what value did he place upon history? What does Huck Finn himself say about history? Do you remember even one particular incident, especially in the novel, where this is addressed? What incident do we read here?
I think Miss Watson was mentioning the story about Moses.
Right.
And he said it didn't really matter because Moses was dead long ago.
Right. Okay. That's exactly the incident I'm thinking of. Is the way he basically set aside, it didn't matter, Moses is dead, so why do I need to care about what Moses did? He did not feel, then put it, summarizing this, he did not believe what happened in history, and I'm speaking here of Huck Finn, but in some sense is not Huck Finn representative of probably what Mark Twain himself thought in some sense. That what happened in terms of Moses, what happened in terms of Jesus Christ, really should not have much bearing upon what he thinks or does. Is that correct to say? Mm-hmm. Right. And so how did this end up influencing Huck Finn? And as it were, to the extent that Huck Finn speaks for Mark Twain, how did that influence his religious philosophy?
He just dismissed Christianity because of that, partly.
That is correct. Because obviously, you know, so much of Scripture is based upon history. I mean, it is historical. And anyone who therefore would disparage history and say, you know, this is not important for the way I'm going to view things or the way I live, is going to be, is therefore going to be casting aside Christianity. All right, so that also covers even question five here. Modern society has often found the study of history to be distasteful. Hence, the subject of history has been replaced by now it's even called social studies often. It mentions the industrialist Henry Ford spoke for many moderns when he said, history is bunk. And as we said, there are various clues in this novel of Huckleberry Finn of what Huck Finn's regard for history was. Okay. Now, Mark Twain himself hated Christianity. In what ways does he ridicule Christianity in The Adventures of Huck Finn?
All the Christians that he portrayed were basically hypocritical.
Can you give me some examples?
Well, like, they went, both the two families who were feuding went to the same church, which the sermon was about brotherly love, but they were still fighting.
Right, right. We have this huge feud going on, and yet these people claim to be Christians. They're church-going people, as it were. So that's one example of what we're talking about here. Are there other examples that you can think of from the novel of how he ridiculed Christianity through this story?
He made fun of his aunt and his mother for like teaching him about prayer.
And that's right. In terms of, and what did he say? How did he ridicule prayer in that way?
It didn't really bring any difference or change.
Right. Okay.
He said he prayed for a fishing pole. He did get the fishing pole, but it did not come with hooks.
Right.
And he kept praying for the hooks, but the hooks never came.
Right, right. So, in essence, by this story, he was seeking to disprove the validity of prayer. So there is another example of how he ridiculed Christianity. Now, question number 7. How is the form of Christianity found in The Adventures of Huck Finn itself perverted and thus an easy target of ridicule? How is the Christianity found in Huck Finn itself perverted and thus an easy target of ridicule?
Well, since all the Christians he portrayed were hypocritical, if you just read that, you would think that Christianity's bad.
So one aspect. Now, were all the people that are described as Christian in this novel hypocritical? Is that the only, is that the totality of what he's saying everyone who is a Christian is, according to as he portrayed it in this novel? Was everyone who presented themselves as a Christian hypocritical? You mentioned, who is an example in a character that is hypocritical?
The two families.
Right, the two families is an example. But are all of the characters that are portrayed as Christian hypocritical?
Well, not as much the aunt and mother.
Okay, not as much the aunt and mother. All right, so what are...
In fact, they were very nice. They were very patient with him and took him in, the aunt.
Yes. So what were the flaws of them that served as a way for Mark Twain to attack Christianity? Because if he had said every Christian is a hypocrite, two-faced hypocrite, basically having a feud and da-da-da, it would be less effective as a way, in terms of saying all, because obviously not all are. So what is the flaw that was tried to be portrayed with respect to these other two?
He was saying that they are naive and foolish.
Yes, they were naive and foolish. So the the attack on them was more naivete and foolishness. To what extent do you think, just sort of following up on that, to what extent do you think Mark Twain was subtly, and in one sense it would be perhaps politically incorrect today, what target was he hitting upon here that perhaps would be a politically incorrect way of doing it today. Or maybe you're not seeing what I'm saying there.
Women who are
women,
religious.
Right. I don't think it's totally, you know, he's saying this is, especially those who are more ardent into this are women. And I'm not, you know, so in one sense, naive women, right? Am I saying that wrong? That in some
probably so.
Yeah. Okay. So we have here that Mark Twain seeks to present simply a perverted form of Christianity. Are there any examples in this novel of anything in the way of sound Christianity that he presents? I'm putting you on the other side. No. Okay. And I think we'll cover one more question and then that is it. Well, first of all, what is, or maybe one or two more questions here. What is a synopsis of a plot? What is a synopsis of a plot? Do you know?
Basically a summary of it.
Right, a summary of it. All right, and now with regard to question 9, who wants to just sort of summarize the plot, give the synopsis of the plot in the novel Huck Finn? Would one of you give a synopsis of the plot here? I don't know, about 5 or 6 sentences. Or maybe I should have both of you do it, to be fair.
Well, Huck runs away from home and goes on an adventure with their black slave. And they go down the Mississippi and they eventually make their way back. But then he runs away again.
Okay. Parnell, can you give a synopsis of Huck Finn?
Basically the same thing that Calvin said. He goes away from home, goes down the Mississippi, and has adventures on the Mississippi, and then returns and then leaves.
Okay.
Plattress.
So here we have it. Basically, it tells about his different adventures of leaving home, and they all, of course, are somehow based around the Mississippi River and the different activities that they engage in, different things they encounter in terms of life on the Mississippi, and of course at the very end it says he's going to run away to the West so he can be free. All right then. Well, I think we shall stop our class there. Are there any questions about what we have covered so far? We will be covering.
What is the religious background of Mark Twain? He seemed to me like Huckleberry Finn was very superstitious.
Yes. That is an interesting answer.
He was very superstitious. The rattlesnake skin and different little things.
Yes. Well, I guess a question there is Mark, do you think that Mark Twain is saying that everything that is true of Huck Finn is true of him?
Okay.
Do you think that he is?
But I'm just curious, you know, he portrays Huck Finn as being superstitious, and so was Jim.
Yes.
And so were a number of people. Was that really the picture of America at that time? Were people superstitious? I never thought of Americans being superstitious.
Well, I think that Mark Twain would probably have seen America as being, even itself, being somewhat superstitious.
Even in the South?
I've
always thought of the South as being Christian.
Well, but from Mark Twain's standpoint, that itself is superstitious, right? From his standpoint, the very fact that America was
religious,
was Christian, to some, you know, to that the very extent that it was to largely Christian, was an example of its superstitiousness. And so, yeah, I think that Mark Twain did see a lot of superstitiousness in America. He, you know, and again, this is not politically correct in our times, but who was especially superstitious in this novel? Perhaps the most superstitious, and that was made fun of sometimes because of it.
Jim.
Right. Jim was, you know...
A black guy,
and because of his... he was so steeped in superstition, more so than the whites here, as portrayed here, he was often the subject of being gullible for being taken. And
also, it mentioned that it was almost the practice of black people that after dinner was over in the evenings, they would just all gather around and someone would be telling stories about ghosts.
Yes, yes. And so, you know, in fact, it's these aspects of Huck Finn, and we will perhaps be discussing these next class. There are certain aspects in Huck Finn, right, that have made modern politically correct people somewhat concerned about this novel, right? Because it takes on certain modern politically correct shibboleths. You know, they're fine with, you know, the attack on Christianity here, but not necessarily so comfortable with the commentary that's made upon the extent of superstitiousness in the black community, for instance. And so there's certain commentary that that modern critics, secularist critics, are not themselves even comfortable with this novel. It is a controversial novel in that sense, even in modern times. Okay, well, I think we better call the day for this class, unless there are any other pressing questions. Okay, well, we will take up our consideration and discussion of this next class. Thank you so much. So,